Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
First show of the new year, and we welcome City Councilman Matt Kelly in this morning. Matt, good to have you here. Good morning.
Good morning, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. We're going to get right to it. We got a lot of stuff to cover, but you had said that you would let me know one way or another if you were going to run or not on this show, and so here we go.
Here we go.
The city awaits.
After chit-chatting with the boss, my wife.
Yeah.
The Big B. And, you know, we chatted about it because now our children are grown up and gone, and we now have some time, and I think we're both getting close to retirement. I think she may even retire this coming year. But she was of the opinion that I'd be nuts if I was in, I'd be nuts if I was out, so I might as well stay in the game. And frankly, there are some issues that are coming forward in the city that are really going to set the tone for the final development of the city, and I would feel I would like to be there for that part of the process. You know, we're doing our strategic economic development plan, and I know a lot of people, and I've heard from a lot of people that we have a lot of plans. We're just short on execution, and I can't disagree with that. And I would like to see if we come up with something that we can all work with to really see that move forward. You know, we're going to hire preservationists in the next month or two, and I would like to see. Just hiring the preservationist doesn't really change the dynamics in the city. I mean, you've really got to change the culture of city staff with regards to bringing preservation higher up in the priority list. We've had some really bad incidents in the last few years, mm-hmm. and frankly, most of it was our own responsibility, i.e. the city, and we need to deal with issues like that. And then transportation in the next two or three years is going to be an absolute unmitigated mess as the state continues to try to find itself and what it's going to do with transportation. And I guess I actually am the longest-serving member on FAMPO. I've spent more years than anybody else on the board, and I'm pretty familiar with the transportation aspect of things, both transit and transportation. And I'd like to keep the city having a strong voice in transportation and regional issues. So,
okay, so
hopefully I can help mold the final direction that the city will go into, you know, preservation-oriented, maintaining the quality of life and historic character of the city, even though we do have to continue to develop, you know, keep strong voice in transportation and other regional issues. Homeless issues is one that we'll be discussing at GWRC in the next month and how we're going to deal with that as a regional issue. So a few more things to get done, and then I can ride off into the sunset, as it were.
How many years have you been – because you were – involved and interested in the work of city council way before you were first elected.
My first board appointment, which was the Housing Policy Commission, I think early 80s.
Okay.
Had been involved in politics all through my college career and then tried to get on the school board. That didn't quite work out. Unlike most of my colleagues, both locally or in the city and in the area, took me four tries to get elected to council, and I have really enjoyed it. And I really do enjoy being involved in issues. More importantly, the give and take of the discussion of the issues. I don't like to shy away from arguments. I don't like to shy away from opposition. I want to sit down with people who disagree with me and have a good conversation, because you learn a lot. You understand things that you didn't really consider, you know, and you have an obligation to explain to people what you're doing. You've got to answer their questions, address their concerns, and I love that give and take and being involved in that. I'm not much into the speechifying and ribbon-cutting stuff. I'd like to get down and dirty in the issues. Some people say too much, but I think I've had a positive impact on the city and on my tenure, and would like to continue it at least one more term. Again, we've kind of hit a turning point in the city. The decision is going to be made in the next few years that's really going to define the city in the future.
I'm going to talk about some of those issues as we go along this morning. Well, and you go back to a time when you first got involved. City council meetings are so much different now than they were. I mean, I came here in 83 and started covering council right away, and with Gordon Shelton on council and Walt Sheffield on council and Mayor Davies. And the dynamics of council, the number of people that seem to be at council meetings in those days are much different.
I actually looked, you know, I came on council in 2002 during the huge battles with regards to the Silver Developments and Central Park and everything else. And I actually, if I were to look at the length of my entire career on council starting 2002, 2010, and then starting again in 2012, I actually look back at those years, that first term, with probably a lot better view of how things were. Yes, it was chaotic. But there was a lot of community involvement, whether you liked it or not. You had to deal with it. We had recalls going on at the time. Council.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, remember the grassroots.
Yeah.
And, you know, council chambers were packed and people were writing letters to the editors constantly. You know, when I ran the second time, we actually had people putting out comic books in opposition to our reelection and radio programs and Facebook. And, you know, it was just a very vibrant, we'll call it, time in the city, and I really look back at how much, you know, though it got very chaotic, and I think a lot of good came out of that. I mean, when you have that level of involvement, you might walk away not thinking that you won, but anybody who speaks up before council has an impact because it does make people think. Yeah. And unfortunately, now you see a lot less of that. I mean, you're right. The council meetings, there's not the people that were there, you know, years ago. You don't have the community involvement. And frankly, you don't have the council really stepping out to engage the community. You know, if you look at most of the votes that the council take at a meeting, it's pretty much, I think it's a good idea, I'm voting for it. I think it's a bad idea, I'm not voting for it. And or nothing at all. There's not a lot of give and take at the meetings. And there's frankly, and I got chastised by somebody recently when I made this comment at council, is the council doesn't talk to itself. I'm not saying that the council should make decisions behind closed doors, but, you know, when you went to VML school, newly elected official school, you know, meetings were to bring business to conclusion. And that is not to say you don't want to engage the public. I don't think anybody can accuse me of not doing everything I can to engage the public on any issue. But you do have to have some discussions with your colleagues to get a sense of where they're coming from and or what their ideas are, or they might suggest a change that might be considered. And that can still be done in a public venue. In fact, every email we send out is a public document. Yet none of – you know, very little of that is happening. Mm-hmm. So you walk into a meeting on Tuesday and you have absolutely no clue, you know, what anybody's thinking. And when you're talking about trying to present the public a vision of what the city is going to be – that's not a good situation where you have a council that frankly isn't even talking to itself before meetings, and that's not a good thing.
City Councilman Matt Kelly here this morning and just announced that he will be a candidate for re-election with the city council elections in May. Also on the ballot will be the race for mayor and another at-large seat.
It'll be the mayor and the two at-large, and I really do hope that we will see other candidates come forward in this race. I think I believe it's very important, especially now, because again, some very key decisions are going to be made with regards to the future of the city, not only in policy, but key employment, you know, our economic development director, Karen Hedelt, has announced her retirement. That's going to be a very key position to refill, you know, and again, things like that are going to define the city's future. And I would hope that more people will get involved, if not running as candidates, but get very involved in the race and the campaigns and asking questions and attending meetings and holding our feet to the fire.
City Councilman Matt Kelly here. We'll start talking about some of the issues coming up when we come back on Town Talk this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Joined this morning by City Councilman Matt Kelly. One of the issues or one of the tasks that council right away in the new year, I guess, will be getting involved in, Matt, is the selection of a new city manager.
We are already well into that process. The council members have met with Springstead, who is handling the company that's handling the recruiting portion of this, bringing the candidates to the council. And we've given our views on it. We've also asked this time, for the first time, I think we've done this, where we would have them also talk to people outside of the council and the business community and leaders in the community about what their thoughts are. You know, the hope is, you know, we'll have a choice by March. Bev's not leaving until the end of June, so there'll be this transition period. You know, my hope is we hire in March and the new city manager takes charge at that point and Bev kind of just, you know, helps them along.
Yeah.
Until he leaves on the 30th. So, you know, big decision on you know, this will be the person that will be carrying out the wishes of the council and the community. And there's, you know, a lot of issues in that position. You know, do you want somebody who wants to be collaborative work with the council, or do you want somebody who, you know, views city manager as that, I run the city, and, you know, tell me generally what you want me to do and get out of my way. And I'm hoping we're going to have somebody more collaborative, somebody a little bit more involved with the community than we've had. But you shall see.
Well, and you think about it, there hasn't been you think back into the 80s, especially from the for a while there, the city went through a number of city managers, and there were some personality conflicts. In recent years, that hasn't been the case. But just this whole area, just some of the changes with Spotsylvania replacing Doug Barnes and Bev retiring in the city. There'll be a couple of new people at the helm of local government.
And in my career, I guess I've worked under three different city managers: Marvin Bolger coming in, Phil Rodenberg, and then Bev. And they all had their little bit of a different style of doing things. And, you know, that's part of, you know, trying to pick somebody who will work with the council. And even then, when you look at how the council views a position, there's not unanimity in view. As you notice, a lot of times on council, I get told a lot that, hey, that's staff's decision, not yours. And I still believe that we have some, you know, say, you know, when you're looking at key positions to fill, like economic development and tourism and things of that nature, we should be planning commission or planning director. We should be directly involved in some of this. I still remember being told when we set up the our two-year goals and we appointed, quote, champions, you know, council members assigned to the goals. And then I went into council meeting and I said, well, I'd like to attend the meetings of these issues, on my issues, and being Mark Whitley looking at me and going, first, a few seconds of silence, you want to sit in the meetings? Yeah. I'll have to check on that. I was going, excuse me?
I'm on city council.
I don't think you need to check on that. If, you know, if I want to be involved in those things, I should. And I, you know, part of the mindset for some people is we have a very experienced staff, and we do, and we should defer to staff.
Yeah.
I'd like to understand how we get from point A to point B. And so often, you know, we get one work session and staff says, this is what we recommend. It's not how did we get here or these are the options. It's here we are, take this, or, you know, we start from scratch.
Yeah.
And I don't frankly like that the way that works. I think we should be more involved in the process. In economic development, we should be. In my first few terms, I mean, it was up to Washington, D.C., down in Richmond on a lot of occasions, you know, dealing with issues of transportation, regional economic development opportunities and things of that nature. And since I've come back on, you know, that's hasn't happened. It just doesn't. And we kind of sit back and wait for things to happen.
Do you think with the retirement later this year of Karen Hedelt, will economic development and tourism be split up, or will the person hired, you know,
that,
do both?
That will always be part of the conversation. Let me say this, and then I have been critical of our economic development efforts. I don't want to be critical of the people in our economic development tourism office. You know, the fact of the matter is we have a very small staff with relatively limited budget, and there's not a lot they can do. And that has always been part of the conversation, which is this something that we need to spend more time and effort on? Do we need to put our, we need to put ourselves in a position where we can be more proactive. If we're going to have an economic strategic plan, we need to be able to go out and start recruiting and contacting businesses and or whatever to bring what we want here. And that would require us revamping that office, adding more muscle to it and probably more dollars to it to make that happen. And, you know, so hiring Karen's replacement is going to be critically important, you know, because this will be the person, hopefully, that will take economic development in the city to, you know, a higher level. Again, not in any way, you know, trying to jump on Karen's case. She had limited resources. I'm talking about if we can get the right person and put the right resources to it, I think we can be a lot more successful than we are.
With the hiring of a preservationist, and in some ways I'm sure a lot of people would think, I'm surprised that a city like Fredericksburg, with the history that we have here, doesn't have one.
That has been, you know, you look at most of the, Alexandria has had an archaeological ordinance and preservation staff, and a lot of localities have. In fact, we've looked at them for best practices for ours. My biggest concern with who we hire for this position is not so much experience and background, which are important. It is, I need somebody who can sit in a room full of staff people when something comes forward and actually say, wait a minute, that does not meet our preservation goals, or that's contrary to what we're trying to do, instead of just kind of sitting there and going, oh, well, I've voiced my thoughts and, you know, nothing's going to happen. You know, we really need a strong voice, because it's going to take us a few years, you know, contrary to what we say publicly, to build that culture into city staff of every decision, what's the impact on the preservation? What's the impact on the character of the downtown? Those need to be considered. I'm not saying we always vote that way, but somebody needs to sit there in the staff meetings and say, these are our preservation goals. This does or does not meet those goals. They've either got to change, or we've got to come back and say, you know, no, this isn't going to work, and have that conversation. So I've talked to Chuck Johnson, who's kind of in charge of that, and said, look, you guys look at the credentials and everything else like that, but we really need somebody who will sit in the room and be a voice for this, and not just, you know, we have a tendency of saying, well, we have a preservationist, so we're therefore a preservation community. You know, we've had an historic district and we've trashed it. The city itself has. You know, just having a preservationist on staff does not mean that you're going to get where you need to go, unless they've got the kahunas, as it were, to do the job.
Well, had this person been in place this last year, a couple of the major incidents that happened, would that have been somebody who could have
We could have been a lot more proactive and said stop. In some of those. With regards to preservation, as much as we expound on it as local government, and I don't want to just jump on our case, but one thing I've learned about local government, we're perception-oriented. We're not outcome-oriented. We just want people to think we're doing things, and we're not really concerned about how the outcome is. We had a case – in preservation, basically, we're taking one step forward and two steps back. That's basically what's been happening. A lot of people forgot we had windows being put in on a very historic building on Caroline Street, which were totally wrong. Staff was advised very early on to stop work order was issued, and yet today those windows are still wrong. Windows are still up. All staff came back and said is, "I'll put a little piece of molding down here on the, you know, on the base of the windows, and we'll be happy." And that was an EDA project. So not only did we have the wrong windows in there, staff didn't enforce our own historic district ordinance, but our EDA paid for it. So when you have things like that happening, you've got a problem. You can say we're for preservation all you want. Yeah. If the bureaucratic aspect of the city is not bought into it, you've got a problem.
So the preservationist may not solve everything.
No, and I don't expect them to, but I do expect them to get. They're going to basically take over the ARB responsibilities. Hopefully, be more proactive in looking at funding sources that we can use for preservation, and make sure as we develop, and there's going to be infill development. We're looking at the Princess Anne Corridor as we speak. You know, we need somebody sitting in the room, you know, tapping us on the shoulder and says, don't forget about preservation. Don't forget about the historic character of the city. Yeah. And we need that.
When do you hope to have somebody hired?
Last conversation I had with Mr. Johnston, we're looking sometime in February.
Okay. So coming up.
Coming up.
There'll be someone on staff and ready to go. City Councilman Matt Kelly here this morning. When we come back, we'll talk about the Princess Anne redevelopment. That's something coming up before council. And a performing arts center also has been discussed in various things on and off. And we'll jump into that. When we come back on Town Talk this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA, it's 829.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk. Done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
City Councilman Matt Kelly here this morning on the program as we continue along. He announced at the beginning of the program that he will be running for re-election in May. The sign-up, and when's the cutoff that the candidates for council, have you looked into that yet?
Well,
it's usually
actually,
March, isn't it?
It's March. I think it's usually like the 15th of March is the cutoff day. You can start securing signatures, which frankly I've already started. You want to? I know you're not in the city resident, so
I didn't know that.
It's in my pocket with me now. So I bump into people, you know, I'll get to sign it, and I'll try to do what I've done before, is try to hit as much of the city as I can, just make an initial meet and greet and chit chat, and let people scream at me for a few minutes. Hopefully still get their signature.
Yeah. But. So, and then the election is May.
And May 3rd, I think, is the first Tuesday in May this year.
I meant to look that up, and usually it's right away the first Tuesday in May. We talked this morning. You talked in talking about making the decision to run about a number of big issues, and this whole Princess Anne redevelopment, the Mill District in the city has gone back and forth and back and forth, and it's going to come back to your meeting.
I think we've gotten to a point now where we have a workable project. You know, the Princess Anne Corridor is a gateway corridor into the city. It is right now, to say, to be nice, it's not in the greatest of shape and needs to be worked on. I think this is one of those areas where we could have, as a city and as a council, been much more proactive in laying out how this was going to develop. We chose not to do that. But in the past few weeks, you know, the last meeting of council, we deferred it until the 12th, and an opportunity to finish discussions that had started with Ed Whalen the week before. I met with him and some others and basically said, listen, there's an issue with density, and we need to deal with that, and I still don't like the river portion of it, and we need to get around that issue. And I think we've come together now with a project that is we've moved some of the density off of the Germana Mill site and shifted it over to the his other section down where the hotel is. The mill site.
Mm-hmm.
And are taking the river portion off the table right now. It won't be part of it. I mean, it's still commercial downtown, a commercial highway, which means he can still develop that if he wants to, but we'll look at that as a separate issue. The one big question was, how many units would we move? It was 90 units. We originally talked about taking 30 and bringing it down to 60 units. But once you got to a certain point, it didn't make sense with the cost to build the underground parking, and we'd rather keep the underground parking into play. You don't want sprawled out parking down there. So we're going to shift 20 units off. It brings it down to 3 stories, so it's a smaller
And that
density.
That was a lot of people talked about that, or that was seemed
right.
to be an
and,
issue.
And there's been some very good conversations going on, and I've explained, you know, I've talked to Ed Whalen about it, and I put out on my Facebook page that I would be happy to meet with residents down there and actually walk the project. And I did that one Saturday morning with some people who expressed an interest in actually seeing where everything was and what was going on. You know, there's still the issue of the quality of the apartments, and I said, Ed, you know, it's your job to explain to the public that, you know, what this will be and what quality of this things will be. And there, I guess the next neighborhood meeting in that area is on the 6th of June or January this week. And he'll make a presentation and I'll be there for that. And I think Billy will be there for that too. It's his district. And we'll keep as much conversation, as we said at the last council meeting, you know, we'll keep the conversation going and keeping the public involved. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Ed Whalen also put up a Facebook page on showing all the plans and the latest changes and everything for the public to see. So,
well, that whole area, if that does change, and you look at some of the drawings that he's had of his plans, that would really change that part of the area.
It's going to be the first project on a corridor, which is always the toughest one to do. And I think once the first project gets in play, I think we will see the rest develop. As regards to the residential component, and this has been a discussion back and forth on the council of the type of residential development. You know, single-family homes, we're not going to be building any more single-family homes. What we'll probably be building is more condos, townhouse, mm-hmm. apartment-type projects. That's what the newest millennial generation is looking for. And, you know, there's the argument that having more people downtown – means more vibrant downtown. You know, that's true, but it's not only an issue of putting in the housing, it's the issue of bringing in the jobs that people can stay and work and live downtown. You know, right now the biggest selling point for downtown is, hey, guess what? There's a train station. Every morning you can get on the train and you can go north to your job, which has its disadvantages too with regards to the types of jobs they have and the income they bring in. But for me, you know, there's been so much talked about apartments are bad, or townhouses are bad, single family are good, home ownership is great and wonderful. You know, for me, and looking at it, and I spent a lot of time over the past month or two looking at housing trends, but at the end of the day, it's really an issue of disposable income. You know, what type of person are you bringing into the community? How much disposable income do they have to spend? You know, there are people that will spend a lot of money but don't want to live in a house. They want to live in an apartment. I mean, I've been in apartments I can't afford. I've been in houses I'd never want to live in. I mean, that's just the way it is. So, you know, we need to look more at, you know, what we're attracting. And, again, millennials and people who want to be close to and work downtown. But next thing, which is critically important, is now we've got to focus and hopefully be a lot more proactive than we've ever been on bringing the jobs to go with this residential development downtown. And that's a conversation we have to have with the community. It's not as easy as everybody thinks. It's not just building a office space and saying, okay, we've got office space, come here. Right now as a region, we have a glut of office space. And also, we're not part of the National Capital Region. So we would have to be very proactive and go up and banging on doors in Washington, D.C. And you know, if you're thinking of moving, here's a place to go, because we're not going to have the advantages that a lot of communities to our north have with regards to being a national capital region. That's a political decision. Basically, our politicians in the northern end of the state and in Maryland don't want the national capital region extended because that's just more competition for them.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of competition, you kind of wonder if in the city's quest to get some jobs and to get some businesses down here, if Spotsylvania will be over by the new VRE station.
Oh, that's going to go gangbusters. That's going to be that will. When I was at the ribbon cutting for the VRE station, I was with walking around with Gary Skinner, and we were already two of the developers already coming up. Hey, we've already got plans. Developing there. And, you know, actually, what I would hope is we'd do a little bit more cooperative as a region on economic development, because frankly, economic development is not defined by political lines. You know, big enough project in Spotsylvania or Stafford is going to have bleed-off effects in the city, as is things in the city can have a bleed-off effect into the counties. And I think there are opportunities, especially for bigger projects that won't necessarily be in the city, but would have a significant economic development impact and something that we should be looking at partnering on. I mean, there are certain projects, Bass Pro Shops, I know, as an example, requires money up front, which as a single locality we would have difficulty doing. But if we kind of pulled our resources, and we almost came up with a revenue sharing deal on baseball between the city and Spotsylvania County, we don't need to let those conversations drop. We need to continue that. There will be other opportunities, and we need to have something in place to deal with revenue sharing.
And in most cases, a lot of times, a lot of people have no idea. A business, they don't know if it's in Spotsylvania or Fredericksburg, and especially if it has a Fredericksburg address.
Sure. Well, the other thing is, you know, incentives, and everybody goes, well, we've got great incentives. Frankly, the city has a crappy incentives program because it's formulaic, and we should really focus it in on what we're looking for as opposed to anybody can apply for it. But the fact of the matter is Stafford has them, and so does Spotsylvania. And we don't want to get in a position of playing, you know, against each other. And we've done it in the past. We've actually had situations. I can tell you right now that Spotsylvania spent about $400,000 I didn't need to spend if they just come to the city and saying, hey, we want them to stay here. And, you know, don't, you know, let them know that. And we could have backed off and they would have saved themselves some money. But we need to be a lot more cooperative if we're serious about economic development or bringing high-paying jobs. We need to basically market ourselves as a region, and we need to work together, and we need to be proactive, which is get off our you-know-whats and, you know, what do we need to be a tech center? What do we need to have? Yeah. If medical is a new thing, what infrastructure do we need to be putting in places? Where do we need to be going to knocking on doors to get those people to come here?
A performing arts center is another topic that the city's always talking about. This is one of those perennial issues.
We just had a, you know, classic great idea that went to, you know what, in the redevelopment of original Walker Grant. You know, we were told they were not doing anything with the theater, and we said, whoa, well, it's a few hundred seat theater.
Yeah.
Let's redo it, and then we can use the Performing Arts Center. And then, you know, then you start getting into the turf wars that go with that and all the other interests. You know, it's me, we want too. And that kind of went by the boards. But what was interesting is the council did agree. We originally were going to commit $1.2 million to rehab that space. We've now pulled that away from the project, but said we're going to hold this in abeyance over here. And if somebody comes up with a proposal for some type of performing arts venue, we'll look at it. And in the last few weeks, an effort has started. They found a location that might be worthwhile. I don't want to get into too much detail because it's not any property anybody owns at this point in the ballgame. And some architectural design work has to be done, you know, what do we need to make this workable, and then have to turn it over to staff and say, okay, what permitting and whatever else are they going to be required to do it. And then hopefully it's going to go before the Arts Commission at our next meeting to put some money forward to get some architectural work done on this site. Let's see where it goes. And then the battle royale will begin, because the arts community is kind of divided in the sense that some people want a $15 to $20 million performing arts facility, and some people are going, you know, 350 to 500 seats is all we really can need and can work with.
Yeah.
We don't need something big. So stay tuned. That'll be a very, very interesting discussion.
And once you get a center, do you have to find somebody to run it?
Yes. And again, the interesting dynamic on any project is going to be if city money is going to be involved, who's going to own it? How's it going to be run? You know, do we have the city own it and have another group run it?
Yeah.
I don't think that there's any city department right now that's in a position to be able to run something like this. It might have to be worked out as a deal with an organization. Like in a lot of places, you know, you have a, you know, symphonic band group, you have the opera group, you have whatever who actually runs the operation, you know, under the conditions of the city. But it's – and the other option, you know, we've gone to the university. The university says, yeah, but as long as it's on campus. And that's – our history of working with the university on performing arts has been pretty bad. They've basically thrown everybody off and keep all their facilities to themselves. The other option is to do something regionally. I mean, if you're going to look at a you know, $15 or $20-plus million project, then you're probably looking at regional. But the bottom line is you need to understand with any performing arts center, and I'll support this effort right now that's being moved forward by some members of the arts community. From a revenue-generating standpoint, these are not direct money gainers. These are money losers. You make the money. It's a quality-of-life issue. It's an issue. People still go to restaurants and everything else between shows.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're not, you know – I actually had an interesting conversation with people who are very big supporters of performing arts but didn't like baseball. And I was kind of going – because they didn't think baseball was a winning – you know, baseball stadiums make – smaller stadiums make a lot more money than these do. But, I'm willing to support both. But we've got a project. It's going to move forward. Arts Commission, hopefully on its January meeting, will help with give it a little kickstart so we can do some architectural work and start moving forward on it.
Okay. So we should hear – sites and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, something to look for. Before we take a break, this just occurred to me. I don't think we've ever talked about this. I can remember years ago. I mean, I can remember this as with you and City Council trying to find a site for the new James Monroe High School, and when you did the new Walker Grant School. Is how much more life does Hugh Mercer have as a school? Is that the next school that's going to have to be replaced in the city?
We're looking at having in the next, what I think 5 years, having to build a new school.
Okay,
one more school, and probably we'll be done in that general area. We've put the addition on there. They still have the other buildings on that site, but it's something we're going to have to look at.
I haven't been over there, but I know that that's now one of the more older schools in the city. City Councilman Matt Kelly here this morning. We'll come back. We'll talk transportation, always a favorite topic, and we'll wrap it up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
City Councilman Matt Kelly here this morning as we talk about things. You're dealing with a lawsuit, the whole deal around the National Bank building on Princess Anne Street. Is there much you can talk about that and where that's going?
Where we're at and where we're going, of course, the city has asked that the case be, in a sense, dismissed due to an improper advertising of the public hearing. Frankly, for me, that's always been an issue with the city in that when we publish in the paper a public hearing, not only for the ARB, but especially the Planning Commission, they're written in such a way that for the most of the public, unless they're very versed in zoning, make absolutely no sense. And I've had situations where I've gone to HFFI and said, well, why didn't you speak on this issue? Well, why would we? Well, it's going to allow 75-foot buildings on the riverfront. He goes, we don't want that. I said, well, we didn't know. All it said was, commercial CD zoning, rezoning from floodline due to, and all this other crap. If that, and frankly, the advertisement was vague on this particular project. It didn't really explain anything what was really going on. Or the context of the building and the intersection itself. So if the judge rules in our favor, everything comes to a screeching halt, we're done. And basically the ARB has to re-advertise and restart the process. If the judge doesn't rule in our favor, then we're back to going to court and having a conversation on all the details of how this came about. And I think if it goes to the court situation, there's going to be some people who are going to be not want to go through that process and how that actually happened, both on the staff level, ARB level, and even city level, as well as potentially the applicant himself.
Speaking of the paper, when Bill Vacos has bought that, or his company has bought that building and everything over on Amelia Street, is that likely to be then developed over in that area?
Well, the paper, my understanding, gets to stay there for a year.
For another year, right.
I actually got a hold of the Vacos group through some of my connections in Spotsylvania County and have asked for a meeting this month. I think this is one of those projects that we probably want to start to conversate and be in the room early for that conversation instead of, after the fact. So hopefully I'll be getting together with Vacos and company sometime this month to talk about exactly what they plan to do with that piece of land.
Boy, you talk about different areas of the city, because we talked about the Princess Anne redevelopment and the Mill District and that area changing, that whole area on Amelia Street, because underground parking there?
Well, one of the things that some of us on council have talked about, not all of us, is that it would be better if the council were brought into some of these larger projects at the very beginning, because what's been happening, especially with the Princess Anne project, is it goes through its normal process to the Planning Commission, and then it hits us, and then we seem to just start the whole process all over again because we asked a bunch of questions that weren't asked at the planning level, and we've put it off until we're again. Hopefully, I think we've got a project that everybody can live with, and my hope is that it will kickstart further development of the Princess Anne corridor, and again, appropriate. I mean, I understand we're going to have to do a little higher density. Not necessarily happy with all that, but that's the way it is. And we've got to be very good in how we plan the rest of that corridor out.
Just a few minutes left for transportation, and we'll do a lot of this in future shows. But as we go into the new year, and as you look at transportation in this area, any reason for optimism on anything?
No.
Didn't think so, but
actually, it is even more convoluted and bizarre than it ever was. HB2 has really, everybody's still trying to figure out what HB2 is. And, not to want to rain on everybody, recovering from New Year's parties and stuff like that. I mean, everybody went hurrah when the Congress finally passed this omnibus long-term five-year transportation plan. But if you get down into it and look at how they're going to fund it It's a lot of one-time money being brought in from all these little pockets from all over the place. So in 5 years, you know, so there really is no consistent funding source for this plan. It's just one-time money from a bunch of this pocket. So in 5 years, we've just dug the hole deeper, and we'll be facing the same issues we are now, except it'll be worse because we won't have, you know, the money there. We really need to review the process and streamline that, but we also need to get the funding sources for transportation, more long-term funding sources, dedicated to transportation and not play all these little games, shell games that we're playing.
Well, I remember when Governor McDonald's big transportation plan passed and everyone was hurrahing, and I remember you sitting here and saying it looks good right now, but let's see what happens when it's implemented.
Well, guess what? A lot of the money that they were planning on in that bill has not materialized.
For
the state, okay. Just in general, to allocate. And, you know, so that's, you know, become more and more of an issue, too. You know, you need to look at sometimes really take at least peel off the original what you're reading in the paper and look a little bit deeper on. Yes, it was great that we did these things, but how are we going to fund them and what are the funding sources? And when you start looking at that level of it, you kind of go, oh, my God, what the hell were they thinking? Because, again, well, they're thinking the next election cycle. You know, we'll kick the can down to the next election cycle.
Yeah.
We don't have, unfortunately, in politics today, a ability to take a longer view beyond the political cycle. And that's unfortunate.
City Councilman Matt Kelly here this morning. Again, he is running for re-election. You had the greatest campaign signs. I have one in my office. You going to do that again?
Now that I've changed the facial layout and dropped about 60 pounds, I've already talked to a little bit with Bill Harris about can he do a new one for the coming campaign. I think he will oblige me on that.
Matt Kelly. Matt, good to see you.
Good to see you soon.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That's it for
Town Talk. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.